Now, faith is confidence in what we hope for and assurance about what we do not see. This is what the ancients were commended for. By faith, we understand that the universe was formed at God's command, so that what is seen was not made out of what was visible. By faith, Abel brought God a better offering than Cain did. By faith, he was commended as righteous when God spoke well of his offerings. And by faith, Abel still speaks, even though he is dead. By faith, Enoch was taken from this life so that he did not experience death. He could not be found because God had taken him away. For before he was taken, he was commended as one who pleased God. And without faith, it is impossible to please God. Because anyone who comes to him must believe that he exists and that he rewards those who earnestly seek him. By faith, Noah, when warned about things not yet seen, in holy fear built an ark to save his family. By his faith, he condemned the world and became heir of the righteous, that is in keeping with faith. By faith, Abraham, when called to go to a place he would later receive as his inheritance, obeyed and went, even though he did not know where he was going. By faith, he made his home in the promised land, like a stranger in a foreign country. He lived in tents, as did Isaac and Jacob, who were heirs with him of the same promise. For he was looking forward to the city with foundations, whose architect and builder is God. And by faith, even Sarah, who was past childbearing age, was enabled to bear children because she considered him faithful who had made the promise. And so from this one man, and he is as good as dead, came descendants as numerous as the stars in the sky and as countless as the sand on the seashore. All these people were still living by faith when they died. They did not receive the things promised. They only saw them and welcomed them from a distance, admitting that they were foreigners and strangers on earth. People who say such things show that they are looking for a country of their own. If they had been thinking of the country they had left, they would have had the opportunity to return. Instead, they were longing for a better country, a heavenly one. Therefore, God is not ashamed to be called their God, for he has prepared a city for them. By faith, Abraham, when God tested him, offered Isaac as a sacrifice. He who had embraced the promises was about to sacrifice his one and only son, even though God had said to him, "It is through Isaac that your offspring will be reckoned." Abraham reasoned that God could even raise the dead, and so in a manner of speaking, he did receive Isaac back from the death. By faith, Isaac blessed Jacob and Esau in regard to their future. By faith, Jacob, when he was dying, blessed each of Joseph's sons and worshipped as he leaned on the top of his staff. By faith, Joseph, when his end was near, spoke about the exodus of the Israelites from Egypt and gave instructions concerning the burial of his bones. By faith, Moses' parents hid him for 3 months after he was born, because they saw he was no ordinary child and they were not afraid of the king's edict. By faith, Moses, when he had grown up, refused to be known as the son of Pharaoh's daughter. He chose to be ill-treated along with the people of God rather than to enjoy the fleeting pleasures of sin. He regarded disgrace for the sake of Christ as of greater value than the treasures of Egypt, because he was looking ahead to his reward. By faith, he left Egypt, not fearing the king's anger. He persevered because he saw him who is invisible. By faith, he kept the Passover and the application of blood so that the destroyer of the firstborn would not touch the firstborn of Israel. By faith, the people passed through the Red Sea as on dry land, but the Egyptians, when they tried to do so, they were drowned. By faith, the walls of Jericho fell after the army had marched round them for 7 days. By faith, the prostitute Rahab, she welcomed the spies, was not killed with those who were disobedient. And what more shall I say? I do not have time to tell about Gideon, Barak, Samson, Jephthah, about David and Samuel and the prophets, who through faith conquered kingdoms, administered justice, and gained what was promised, who shut the mouths of lions, quenched the fury of flames, and escaped the edge of the sword, whose weakness was turned to strength, and who became powerful in battle and routed foreign armies. Women received back their dead, raised to life again. There were others who were tortured, refusing to be released so that they might gain an even better resurrection. Some faced jeers and flogging and even chains and imprisonment. They were put to death by stoning. They were sawn in two. They were killed by the sword. They went about in sheepskins and goatskins, destitute, persecuted, and ill-treated. The world was not worthy of them. They wandered in deserts and mountains, living in caves and in holes in the ground. These were all commended for their faith, yet none of them received what had been promised, since God had planned something better for us, so that only together with us would they be made perfect. How awesome is that for a scripture? That my initial plan was to read half of that and then tell you to read the rest yourself, but I couldn't stop reading it. Like, I can't stop, because it is just example after example of incredible lives lived, lives with legacy and purpose, or sometimes even just single moments of a life that went on to change history. And they were all driven by faith. They were lives that impacted those around them and those long after they were gone. They were lives that honored God. And that passage is just so full of people that lived to earnestly seek him. I want it, guys. I want it for me. I want it for you. I want it for all of us. I've had an awful lot of stuff stirring in my spirit and in my head that I wanted to bring tonight, all around this passage and this theme. And I've got to be honest, trying to nail down something coherent that would actually make sense when delivering has been quite tough. It's been just as hard to try and tie down a title for this kind of message too. But this is my best effort. So tonight I want to speak to you about living a faithful life that honours God by viewing our time on earth through an eternal lens. It's a bit of a mouthful. I'll say it again. Living a faithful life that honours God by viewing our time on earth through an eternal lens. Does that make sense? Okay, I hope so. If it doesn't now, hopefully by the time I've finished, it makes a bit more sense. Let's just take a look then to start with at the passage. What's it all about? Let me give you a little context. The book of Hebrews is a general epistle. It's a letter written mainly to Hebrew believers. We're not entirely sure who wrote this letter, but it sounds like it was likely Paul. And this letter, the book of Hebrews, was essentially written to encourage these believers in their faith in Jesus. Actually, one of my Bible commentaries said this about it. It says, its purpose, the book of Hebrews' purpose, was to present the Lord Jesus Christ as perfect and superior in comparison to anything Judaism and the Old Covenant had to offer. That gives you a little background into the letter of Hebrews, but as to this chapter itself then, chapter 11, this is titled Faith in Action. And so it keeps the theme of encouraging these guys in their faith, but it particularly focuses on how that faith is outworked. And as you can tell, just by having a quick kind of glance through the passage, there's a real emphasis on looking ahead, isn't there? It's a focus on certain people's actions and how those actions helped further the kingdom at a later time, often long after that person's time on earth had ended. Let's just take a look quickly at a few examples. So Abraham, by faith, Abraham obeyed and went, even though he did not know where he was going. We know that in doing this, Abraham paved the way for future generations to enter the promised land. And we know that his descendants included Moses. By faith, Moses chose to be mistreated along with the people of God rather than to enjoy the fleeting pleasures of sin. And I love what it then goes on to say after that. It says, he regarded disgrace for the sake of Christ as of greater value than the treasures of Egypt, because he was looking ahead to his reward. Now, we know that Moses went on to deliver the Israelites out of slavery in Egypt, and that his successor as the leader of the Israelites was Joshua. The siege on Jericho, led by Joshua, gave Rahab the opportunity to put her faith into action. By faith, prostitute Rahab welcomed the spies. And you may well already know this, but guess what? You can trace Rahab's family tree all the way to Jesus. Verse 13, all these people were still living by faith when they died. They did not receive the things promised. They only saw them and welcomed them from a distance, admitting that they were foreigners and strangers on earth. Verse 39, these were all commended for their faith, yet none of them received what had been promised, since God had planned something better for us, so that only together with us would they be made perfect. I said I wanted to speak tonight on living a faithful life that honours God by viewing our time here eternally. This chapter is absolutely full of examples, and what I want to do tonight is just dig a little deeper and hopefully allow us to understand how we can align our lives on the same kind of path. And to do this, I want to just highlight three areas where I feel it would be beneficial to broaden our understanding. And the first is this, it's the significance of biblical faith. Let me explain what I mean by biblical faith. And this is just my opinion, but I see faith as something that can often come in different levels and varying degrees, right? For example, I would maybe say that I have faith that in a few weeks' time, England will be in Russia lifting a cup. Do I have a strong faith in this? Possibly not. Would I book a flight to Russia and buy a ticket to the World Cup final because I'm that convinced in my faith that England are going to be there? It's unlikely. Would I let my faith in England's football team affect my actions in life? Nada. No. That is not biblical faith. And maybe it's not even faith at all. I don't know. I think that perhaps over time we've diluted this word faith somewhat. And now we find ourselves and other people using it in all sorts of different scenarios to varying levels. So let's just take a minute to define it. Luckily for us, the passage we're speaking on, so Hebrews 11, literally starts with a definition of faith. Verse 1, now faith is confidence in what we hope for and assurance about what we do not see. This is what the ancients were commended for. So confidence in what we hope for and assurance about what we do not see. To add to this, a dictionary definition will tell you that faith is complete trust or confidence in someone or something. And the last thing I would add to that definition of faith is that clearly from this passage, faith inspires action. True biblical faith inspires action. So that, summed up, is faith. Complete confidence. Assurance, it inspires. Would I fly to Russia in faith that England would be in the final? No, my faith in England's football team would not inspire my actions. But would I agree to move to Ealing to take a part-time job in St. Stephen's Church without knowing where I was going to live or quite how I was going to afford to live because I heard God's call? Yes, that is biblical faith. It's faith in Jesus. That's what inspired that action. Why is this significant? Why does it matter? Well, I see two reasons. The first one, I think verse 6 makes pretty clear. It says this. It says, without faith, it is impossible to please God. I will take this one step further and say, without faith, it's impossible to make faith-inspired actions. And because of that, without faith, it's impossible to earnestly seek God. And that's what he asks of us. Please don't think that I'm standing here saying that none of us have any faith and that none of us are pleasing God. It's definitely not what I'm saying. But what I said when I first started talking about the significance of this faith was that it comes in varying degrees, right? So what we have now is example after example given in Hebrews 11 of people with incredible faith who lived such impactful and influential lives that we're still talking about them thousands of years later. And then we have an understanding, at least, of what a life with no biblical faith looks like. It's one that isn't pleasing to God. Now, I imagine that we're all somewhere then on this scale. I'm a drummer, so I'm going to use a drumstick to show something. So, if this is one side of the scale, if this is the guys in Hebrews 11, our faith is inspiring our actions, we're game changers, we're history changers, and this is we do whatever we want because our faith doesn't change what we do, we're all somewhere in here, aren't we? I don't think any of us are here. Maybe some of the Uber guys are up here, but generally speaking, we're going to be within this somewhere. And what I would do is just encourage us to be honest with ourselves about where we fall on this scale. Maybe at one point we were up here and we were really kind of in tune with the Spirit, and we felt like, you know, all of our actions were, we were hearing God's call, and that was taking us to places. And then maybe we took a knock. Maybe we, you know, we stepped out in faith, and then maybe we misheard and things didn't work out as planned, and now we think we're back here. Or maybe we started back here, but the longer we've gone on our journey of faith and following Jesus, we've gradually trusted him more and more and began to step up this line. I don't know where you fall, but I would encourage you to just be honest with yourself about where it is that you think you fall on that line. And the second reason then as to why I see this being of real significance is because without biblical faith, what's the point? Without true faith in the gospel, faith that Jesus is coming back, faith that this is not our home, honestly, what's the point? Where's the motive? We've got to truly believe that this, our current situation, is not our final destination. And we have to let that inspire our actions. We have to have faith in the fact that our reward awaits us and isn't here. Listen to verse 25 again. Moses regarded disgrace for the sake of Christ as of greater value than the treasures of Egypt, because he was looking ahead to his reward. In other words, he knew that his true reward awaited him in heaven, and that all of earth's treasures, which were pretty much available to him in fairness, should he have wanted them, were nothing in comparison. I mean, think about it. There is no reason for Moses to act that way, to make those decisions, if he didn't have faith in a greater reward. If we want to live a faithful life that honors God, then we have to have biblical faith. You know, faith that the eternal life Jesus speaks of is actually for us. Let's move on and look at the second area here that I really feel we should try and gain a better understanding of. And that is the lack of comfort. I could take you through every one of the examples given in that chapter, and with the exception of maybe Enoch not having to experience death, comfort in the lives of the individuals and their faith-inspired actions is pretty hard to come by. In fact, I imagine for most of them, their earthly lives would have been considerably more comfortable if they hadn't acted in the ways that faith had inspired them to do so. There's nothing comfortable for Abraham in having to up and leave a home and a place in which I'm sure he was settled in without knowing where it is he was headed. Yeah, the comfortable option would have been to have stayed put. I can imagine it. You know, thanks God, I'm going to stay. I'm going to stay here where I can see where I'm going to live. There's nothing comfortable for Moses choosing essentially persecution instead of indulging in the treasures of Egypt. There was nothing comfortable about Rahab risking her life to hide spies in her home, even though, in the end, we know that that decision was what ultimately saved her life. She didn't know that. And what this says to me, and in fact what most stories in the whole of the Bible say to me, is that obedience and comfort rarely come together. And actually what I want to do is just present you with a question to just ponder upon. Is it possible to live a life that truly honors God while living comfortably? You know, I've got a friend. Actually, he's one of my closest and most respected friends. He's a great, strong man of God, and he essentially lives by this this phrase, this motto, that comfort is a myth. And he genuinely kind of lives this out in his life in a number of different ways. So he's really into his fitness, and I regularly see him putting his body through some pretty mental, physical regimes and crazy challenges. But he does this too in his spiritual life and walk. He's never comfortable. He's always pursuing. He's always chasing what God has next for him and his family. He's always obedient to the call. He's always running that race. And actually, I called him this week and I said, you know, I'm speaking on this kind of stuff on Sunday night, and I thought you might have some good insight into it. And I asked him that question I just presented to you guys. So can we live a life that truly honors God while living comfortably? And he said this. He said, it all comes down to that idea of spirit over flesh. And he's obviously referring to that passage in Galatians. Let me read it to you. Galatians 5:16. It says, so I say, walk by the Spirit, and you will not gratify the desires of the flesh. For the flesh desires what is contrary to the Spirit, and the Spirit what is contrary to the flesh. They are in conflict with each other, so that you are not to do whatever you want. But if you are led by the Spirit, you are not under the law. And so my friend said it all comes down to this. And he said, Ash, that the need for spirit over flesh is never going to be a comfortable state to be in. It's true, isn't it, actually? When we're comfortable in our flesh, we're comfortable in our, like, our finances, we're comfortable in our homes, we're comfortable in our jobs. It's all flesh. And the Bible is clear. It says that is in conflict with the Spirit. And it's never going to be comfortable. But it is what God calls us to. The time for comfort isn't now. We can be comfortable later. We can be comfortable in our heavenly home when we receive our real reward. But while we are here on earth, while we are acting as Christ's ambassadors, we have to understand that to be efficient in that role, we cannot afford to be comfortable. Can we live a life that truly honors God while living comfortably? Well, honestly, no. I honestly don't think so. Because when our faith inspires our actions, the evidence and the examples we have show us that those actions will take us out of our comfort zones. And if we are living comfortably, then our spirit will not win in that conflict over our flesh. I'm nearly finished, guys. I just want to show you now a video before I do that will really kind of explain my last point. Remember I said I had 3 points and 3 areas that I wanted to highlight. So the significance of biblical faith, the lack of comfort in those lives we've looked at. And my last point is this. It's the undisputed importance of eternity. So I just want to show you this video, that what I mean by this one about to be shown. This is taken from a sermon by an American speaker, Francis Chan. He's an amazing speaker with a really interesting story. Just to give you a quick bit of context, he and his wife started a church back in the 90s in America that grew to be a mega church. Thousands and thousands of people were attending. And he actually walked away from it. In the end. And in doing so, quite famously gave this sermon that was titled something along the lines of, if Jesus started a church next door to mine, you would all still come here. And he's just completely changed his attitude to church and evangelism and just how he lives out that Christian life. And it's all really challenging stuff. It's desperate to start, so I'm going to let it go. But this, I think, is really challenging, and it's taken from one of his more recent sermons.
Keep making you look at your past, and we got to keep looking at the future. You look at your past, you're going to get depressed, and you're going to get stuck in your past. You look to your future and go, man, what is that moment going to be like? See, my actions, a lot of things I do is because I'm thinking about my future, and I'm thinking about that moment when I see Jesus, because I realize that everything I do is going to bring either reward or regret. It really is. I've got an extra $1,000. Okay, on that day, that future, when I see Jesus, what is going to bring reward and what's going to bring regret? I could buy a lot of fun things for myself with that $1,000, but on that day, Paul's saying, I'm just looking at that day, going on that day, maybe I just give it to the poor, because on that day, I'll be rewarded for it, versus, yeah, I mean, we've all bought things we regret, right? You go, oh, that was a waste of money, that's a waste of money, that's a waste of money. Think about what we're going to say at the end. When we stand before God, are you going to regret the car you drove, regret the house you lived in, regret the clothes you wore, regret, you know, just everything? What are you going to regret? What about your time and how you spent it? Are you going to go, oh, I'm so glad I watched 7,000 movies. Or are you going to regret, wow, I wasted all of that time now? It's about the future. Paul's going, man, what am I going to look forward to at the end? I'm going to bring an illustration that, this is like the first illustration I did. It was 20 years ago, but I can't think of a better way to explain it. I actually didn't use a rope back then. I used remember computer paper when it was all stuck together? And it had the holes on the side that you had to peel off. Remember that? I remember getting a roll, and some of you guys have no idea what I'm talking about, which is crazy to me. But, cause that was the best, you know? And it never worked right because of the rolling things. But I remember being a youth pastor, and I put that computer paper all the way around the room. But I'm gonna use a rope now because I can't find that computer paper. Imagine this rope. Okay, pretend this rope just goes on forever, okay? Just imagination. Pretend it goes around the world a few times. It doesn't. It ends at the rock. But let's just imagine this thing goes on forever. Now, imagine that this rope is a timeline of your existence. You just exist forever. You see this red part? This would represent your time on Earth. You've got a few short years here on Earth, and then you've got all of eternity somewhere else. This is your existence. And what blows me away is some of you, all you think about is this red part. It's all you think about. You're consumed with this. You go, oh man, I can't wait till here. You know, I'm going to work hard. I'm going to save so I can really enjoy this part right here. And you're consumed with that, and you're thinking, oh man, am I going to get to travel? Am I going to eat well? Am I going to do this during this part? And I'm like, are you kidding me? What about this? What about this? What about all this stuff? It's crazy to me because the Bible teaches that what I do during this little red part determines how I'm going to exist for millions and millions and millions of years forever. And so why would I spend this little red part trying to make myself as comfortable as possible, enjoying myself as much as I can? Paul says, look, I'm going to live my life for this mission. I'm going to spend my life, invest my life for this moment when I cross that finish line. See, I'm going to forget about all the stuff I could enjoy, and I'm not going to look around. I'm going to be like a runner, just looking at that moment when I face God, because when I face Him, then I don't get this chance over again. We get one chance at this life on earth, and it can end at any second for any of us. We've got one chance at this, and then comes eternity. And I'm not going to be fooled. I'm not going to spend my life down here. See, people look at some of my decisions and go, oh, you're so stupid, because that's going to really affect this. I go, no, you're stupid, because it's going to affect all of this. Man, I'm serious. I look at the way people live, and I go, wow, that is so crazy. You are so crazy. You're gonna do that right now, just to enjoy right now, not even knowing if you have tomorrow, and you think that's smart and that I'm dumb? It doesn't make any sense. Paul goes, I'm not going to look around at all this stuff. And it's tempting. It's tempting to all of us. That's what I'm saying. Down here, it's crazy because everyone lives that way. Everyone lives for the red part. No one's thinking about the millions of years afterwards. It's this crazy deception that we can't get out of our minds. And Paul goes, I'm not doing that. He goes, I keep my eyes on that. I keep my eyes on that finish line. And I'm going to forget what's behind me. I'm not looking around. I'm straining. Because I'm straining forward. I'm like stretching forward for that mark. I'm going to pass this thing. I'm going to live this out. And I'm going to face Him. I'm going to come before the judges, and He's going to hand me that trophy. He goes, I'm going to get it. And I haven't gotten there yet. He goes, but you better believe I'm using every muscle, exerting every bit about me, because I'm going to pass that line well.
I don't know about you, but I find it really hard to watch that without being challenged. But this is what I think it takes, guys. This is what I think living a faithful life that honors God looks like. And we've got to understand the significance of biblical faith and how it affects our actions. We've got to understand that to be obedient, we may have to be uncomfortable. We've got to understand that what we do on this earth, how we choose to live this life, will impact what comes next.